This is a lemon. And the lemon is often used for something bad, something sour, something negative. We're most familiar when we talk about a car. And if you get a real lemon, your car, when you buy it, has all these problems and you have to fix it, fix a lot of things. And then some people are familiar with, you got a lot of lemons in life. When life gives you lemons, what are you supposed to do? And so maybe you feel like you've had a lot of lemons in this last week. Maybe your summer is not going real well. It's kind of boring. You don't have a lot going on, and you're having to survive the 100-degree heat of the Houston summer. And so you feel like your summer is a real lemon. Or maybe you're fixing up your house, and it's not your car, but it's your house, and you've got leaks or you've got problems, and you're facing some real lemons in your house. Or maybe this last week you've had some real difficulties with your spouse or someone in your family, and you're just arguing. You've got a real lemon situation at home, or maybe that imperfect boss who's not managing well, or conflicts or struggles at work. Maybe you're facing some real lemons. Or look around you. Right here in the church, you might, as you're engaged in ministry, you might be facing a few lemons. You got a few lemons sitting around you? Were you disappointed with something? Is something not quite going right in the ministry in this last week? What do we do with a life full of lemons? What do we do as a church? Well, that's what we want to look at this morning. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. How do we live in a lemon world? What are we supposed to do? We're going to take a look at that. And we're picking up in chapter 4. The writer is continuing his theme of injustice, which he's actually started in chapter 3, verse 16. So let's pick up. He says in chapter 4, verse 1, again, he's making some observations about world. I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of the oppressed, they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors, there was power. And then the repetition, there was no one to comfort them. So Qoheleth, the preacher, the assembler, is depicting a bleak situation. He lives in a world of oppression. And he unpacks this with us. He says there's tears. And then he says no one's there to comfort them. And he says, you know, there's people who are in power who could do something about it. But nothing is happening. And he repeats, there's no one to comfort them. So the preacher is living in a world of oppression. And then in verse 2, we have one of the most depressing verses in the Bible. It tells us, and I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. What a depressing verse. Better to be dead than to be alive because of all the injustice that we see, because of the oppression. But then he gets even worse in verse 3, and he says, but better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. It's better to be dead than to be alive. But the best is if you never even came into the world at all. What a depressing message. But this is the world that Qoheleth, the preacher, lives in. He acknowledges that in his world, oppression exists. And so, friends, how do we live in a world of lemons? One of the first things that we can do to interact with our world is to concede that oppression exists. To concede that oppression exists. And oppression exists even in our world today as well. Not only in Qoheleth's world, the preacher's world, but in our world today too. Our college students just did a study this morning on abortion. And perhaps the greatest part of our society that exists with oppression are the unborn. There are tears of the unborn, but there's no one to comfort them. There are people in power, legislatures, Supreme Court justices, who could do something to protect the oppression of the unborn, and yet there are still tears. So what do we do? Do we give up as we concede that oppression exists? No, I don't think we give up. We do fight for justice, and we do hope and pray that oppression will be eradicated, that laws will be passed to protect those who are being oppressed. But we also acknowledge that no matter how much oppression, no matter how much justice we transform from injustice, that as long as we have fallible leaders, as long as we live in this fallen world, that we will face lemons and oppression in our society. And so we must concede that oppression exists. And maybe you this morning, maybe you feel that you are part of that oppressed class, whether it's because of your gender or your ethnicity. So let us keep seeking to bring justice to our world, but let us also acknowledge that we won't have perfect justice until the perfect and righteous King comes to reign. But let's move on. Verse 4, he continues, and he starts with a theme that we've been talking about before. Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and striving after wind. So again, we've talked about this before. We've talked about toil and the vanity of toil and labor. But this time, we're getting to the heart and to the motive of the matter. And the preacher says that so much of what motivates our labor and our toil is envy. It's trying to get one up on the Joneses. Or in our church, trying to get one up on the Wongs, right? We don't have too many Joneses in here, but we got a few Wangs and Jongs and all that. So always try to go a little bit higher, go a little bit further than our neighbors. And so, yeah, you work hard, you get that 4.8 GPA. Well, I'm going to get a 4.9 GPA, Okay? And so we're always trying to go beyond, to get that more, to get that bigger, that higher position than the guy next door. And what is this is our what does the author say? He says that this is hevel, right? Vanity. And it's, well, you see the smoke? It's like, you don't see that. I need to bring my dry ice, but I did bring my match today. It's like trying to strive after the wind, the smoke. It's worth, you know, that kind of motivation in our work is, that's what it amounts to, trying to grab after the smoke. But then verse 5 goes on. It balances us a little bit. He says, the fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. What's he doing here? He's countering the other extreme of laziness. Folding hands is a metaphor for not doing any work, you know, sitting on my sofa, on my backside, watching videos all day. And what's the result of that? You eat your own flesh. You don't work, so you don't eat. So what do? You become cannibal. That's what happens in hunger, in famine, in siege. People start eating one another. And so we don't want to do that. We don't want to just be lazy and fold our hands. So verse 6 gives us a good correlate, corrective. And verse 6 tells us, better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and a striving after wind. So what we want to do is to have this middle ground of working. Maybe we don't get that high GPA. Maybe we get a little bit more of a mediocre GPA, okay? But we're able to take a walk in the park. We're able to celebrate. We're able to rest a little bit. Maybe because we're not getting that highest position, or we're not getting that biggest house, but we're not fighting and arguing with our coworkers and stabbing them behind the back, that's a lot better. And the proverb, and so what? How do we live in a world where we're faced with difficulty, with struggle, where we still have to reverse the effects of the fall? Concede that there will be oppression, but we also want to control our envy. And verse 6 gives us that good in between, and it resonates with a lot of what we see in the Proverbs. A lot of the Proverbs talks about this. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. Better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. So, friends, as we interact in a world of lemons, let us concede that oppression exists, but let us also control our envy. And moving on, verse 7, it tells us, again, he's making observations of vanity under the sun. And he talks about one person, verse 8. He doesn't have a second person. He doesn't have a son or a brother. And there's no end to all his toil. Furthermore, he's never satisfied with riches. And he doesn't think about why he's working so hard. He says, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? And he says, this also is vanity, hevel, and an unhappy business. Vanity, right? So this is a little bit of a transitional verse where he has just talked about toil and labor, But then he brings in a social element. Earlier in chapter 2, he talked about the vanity of toiling when a person did have an heir. But that heir, you weren't sure if that person was going to spend the money wisely or foolishly. Well, how much more does it feel vain when you're breaking your back, working so hard, and you don't even have that social element to pass on the wealth that you've worked for? This is vain in an unhappy business. And so he brings in the blessing of the social element in verses 9 through 12, and he starts to give some examples of what can get us out of this. And so he talks about, and we've seen these verses a lot in our weddings, right? Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. So it's good to have companionship. It's good to collaborate. It's good to work with others because there's even a business or a financial benefit. And so I was thinking the other day that, you know, I could, if I needed to, I could start a lawn business. That's right. I could mow lawns. But what would really be good is if I could team up with my son, Nathaniel, and we could start a lawn business together. And we could, you know, we could make $25 a yard because we're working together, teaming up, collaborating. Two are better than one. And he could do the edging while I do the mowing. You know, we could call it Limbs Lawn Mowers or Limbs Trims. How about that? All right, Limbs Trims. So two are better than one. And then he starts to give some analogies of a person going on a journey, I think. And he says in verse 10, for if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. And so it's good, as you're going on a journey, to have a partner with you, right, along the journey. And as you're going on the journey, so that if you fall down into a little bit of a pit, then the other person can pick you up. And he continues that, okay, there you're going on the journey, and you need to sleep. Well, verse 11 tells us, again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And we know that it gets warmer when we have body heat. Others are around us. And I can testify, just last Saturday in 001, at the deacon's meeting, I was in that room alone, 75 degrees, the thermostat. Man, it was cold. 75 degrees. But you know what? Once those other deacons started coming in to 001, I told Deborah, it's going to heat up real fast. Because for one, the topics of our discussion were going to get pretty hot. You know, we're going to start getting down to the nitty gritty of, you know, those parking spaces and all these. And plus just the body heat. Yeah. So it heated up real fast. And Deborah, we got to turn it down to 74, 73 because it's going to get hot in there. So that's the blessing of collaboration, of working together. And then verse 12, and though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. And so as we face problems, opponents, enemies, it helps to have a team with you. It helps to have a team with you. And so, you know, Iron Man alone going against Thanos, not too good of the odds, right? But you get Iron Man with Captain America and Thor,
that's a pretty powerful team. That's a pretty powerful, you know, chord strand of three. I haven't seen the movie yet, so I heard a few spoilers, though. I heard a couple of, you know, who dies and all that. But that's a strong team. So we want to collaborate. We want to be on a team. And just yesterday, you know, we took out the grandfathers for Father's Day, and Nathaniel, he was wearing this shirt for his glory. And so Grandpa asks, what does his mean? And so Nathaniel says, Jesus, you know. And then for the next, 15, 20, they were debating, arguing. But Nathaniel, he had backup. He had Pamela, Daniel, and even Gabriel. Even Gabriel came up and quoted Ephesians 2, 8, 9. He quoted Ephesians 2, 8, 9 to Grandpa. Man, that was an Avenger force right there. I mean, a strand of four is not easily broken. Praise the Lord. Keep ministering together. Keep collaborating together. And so, I'm sure now. So, friends, how do we face a world of lemons? We want to collaborate. Don't isolate. Don't isolate, collaborate. And so I want to encourage all of us that in our ministries here in this church, make sure we're on a team and we're working together with others. It's easy just to be in your own silo, but how much more beautiful when the cornerstone group is all working together in harmony for the Kingdom Kids on Friday night. How much great is it, guys? How y'all doing in children's ministry on Sunday mornings? You gotta be that Avenger force. Collaborate together, right? It's not a individual track event, right? It's a volleyball team. You gotta work together. And how beautiful it is if the pastoral staff, and when the pastoral staff works together, or your ministry teams in Cornerstone work together. And so I want to really challenge us that as we go through life and we face the lemons and we face the disappointments of ministry, let's do it together. So make sure in your ministries that you're praying together. And sometimes it's more important to build that team than it is to actually minister to the children themselves. It's actually as important or more important that you build that strong team as it is that you are actually ministering to the teenagers or the children, all right? So make sure you're praying together. Collaborate. Don't isolate in our world of lemons. And then lastly, verses 13 through 16, he gives us our fourth better. By the way, there's four betters here in this chapter, and this is the fourth one. The first was better to be dead than to be alive. The second was to better to have one handful with quietness than two handfuls with strife. The third is better are two than one, right? And here's the fourth. Better is it for a poor and wise youth than an old foolish king who doesn't know how to take advice. This poor youth, verse 14, he went from prison to the throne, though in his own kingdom he had been born poor. So the preacher here, he's drawing some comparisons. First he says, it's better to be poor than the rich king. Second, he says, it was better even because this guy was young than the person who was old. And the main reason why was because he was wise. The poor young lad was wiser, and he wasn't foolish. And the main reason that the old king was foolish was because he didn't listen to anybody. He thought he knew how to do it all. And so, what we want to make sure as we're facing our world, disappointment, ministry, lemons, we want to make sure that we continue being teachable. continue being teachable. Now, these next two verses are a little, there's some debate about it. Verse 15, he says, I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that youth. They don't know if this is a new youth or that old youth from verse 13, but no matter what, it's somebody who's going to replace the king, whether it was King 1 or King 2. There was no end to all the people, all of whom he led. So he's leading a great number of people, this new king, whether it's the second king or perhaps a third king. But the clincher is here in the end of verse 16. Yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. So people will be fickle. You know, one day they may love the general manager of the Texans, right? But the next day they say, you're out of here. They won't rejoice in their new leader. And this is what's vain and a striving after the wind. The leaders come and go. And so, yes, it is good to be that pastor. It is good to be that CEO. It is good to be that general manager. But know that that position of influence, it is not really where it's at, because that position will come and go. And people will love you today, and they'll reject you the next day. But while you are there, continue being teachable. And so my encouragement to all of us as we face our world of lemons and disappointments is to keep growing, to keep growing. Don't ever stop growing, no matter how old you are. I want all of us to always be asking, how can I grow as a disciple of Jesus Christ? All the way until we're in our 80s or even 90s or 100s. How can I grow as a disciple of Jesus Christ? And we always need to be working and growing in areas. And also, let us keep collaborating. Let us listen to others, to be teachable, to don't think that we know it all. We know how to do it all. And the Proverbs, again, talks about this, how there's such a blessing when in an abundance of counselors, many advisors, plans will succeed. Abundance of counselors, there is victory. And so keep consulting, keep listening as we face our problems in life. And you might even just keep reading. I was getting a little proud. I was thinking, you know, why do I want to read all these books? I should just write my own book, you know, how to be a good pastor or how to be a good associate pastor or something like that. I still might write my own book, but I don't want to get too proud. So I'm always reading. I'm trying to read. I picked up a new book, Church Unique. A fellow pastor recommended it to me. So we always want to continue being teachable. So friends, today we've talked about what do we do? How do we interact in a world full of lemons? And you know the phrase, when life gives you lemons, what are you supposed to do? Make lemonade, right? We live in a fallen world. We have lemons. But we can make lemonade as we concede that our world is full of lemons, that there is oppression. Yeah, we want to fight for justice, but we must acknowledge that we live in a world of lemons. We need to control our envy as we're trying to get out of this fallen world and redeem the curse. Control our envy. Collaborate. Don't isolate. I really want to challenge each of us to make sure, will you please make sure that you are working with others as you minister, as you serve? Will you do that? And then continue being teachable. So this last week, I had lemons. I had lemons in
my family of origin, there's problems, there's strife, there's imperfection. I was reminded this last week in my conversations that I have lemons. I had lemons in the ministry. Don't worry. Most of you who are here, you're doing great. But there are disappointments. There is discouragement in the ministry. But it's when we face those lemons that it really helps that I have a life partner that who will listen to me, who will pray with me. And I tell you, folks, when my wife and I, when we're tracking together, when we're having our dates together and connecting and recalibrating, and when we're praying about the lemons in life and the ministry, then we can get through it. We can move through it. And not only with my wife, but when the pastoral team, when we're pulling for one another, supporting one another, interacting with one another, that's beautiful. The church is going to do well. And not only on the pastoral team, but on our ministry teams, whether it's in Cornerstone or Focus, youth, children's ministry. When our ministry teams, when we're not pulling away from one another, when we're working together, we can work through the lemons in life. Concede. Collaborate. And what were the other two? Control your envy. Thank you. And continue being teachable. All right. Concede, control, collaborate, continue being teachable. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you that Jesus came to redeem us from the fall. And Lord, as we face various struggles, various lemons in life, Lord, thank you for the words from Ecclesiastes, which can help us to honor and glorify you in the process. Help us this day, we pray in Jesus' name.